Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It is estimated that in the city of Chicago, in metropolitan Chicago, there are something between 75 and 100 gangs, street gangs. Many of them, a good percentage of them, highly sophisticated criminal organizations involved in the kind of activities that you would expect, things involving guns and drugs. But also, street gangs have been involved in maybe things that you would consider not quite traditional as gang crimes, things like mortgage fraud and selling false identification. And they're becoming increasingly active in the suburbs. This morning in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the gangs of Chicago and a little bit about their activities outside of Chicago. And our guest for the program is Jeanette Tamayo. She is the general for the Chicago Crime Commission. The commission has just recently published a very comprehensive guide. At least it contains what can be known about gangs in the Chicago metropolitan area. It's titled The Gang Book, and is something that's available to anyone who is interested. It was something that was put together, I think, primarily for people in government and law enforcement, but it makes interesting reading. And so if you'd like to find out more about it or about the Chicago Crime Commission, perhaps the best thing to do is go to their website, which is www.chicagocrimecommission.org. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guest, Jeanette Tamayo. She's a graduate of the DePaul College of Law and has worked in a number of capacities. She worked at the Legal Assistance Foundation of Chicago for 4 years, working on a number of different kinds of cases, including civil rights and immigration and domestic violence. She also worked for the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, for the Department of Public Aid, and also at the Illinois Gaming Board, where she was the counsel, and for a little over 2 years, two plus years, she served as executive director, overseeing the state's regulation of riverboat gambling entities and their employees. She's joining us this morning by telephone from Chicago, and we're pleased that she could spend some time with us. As we talk, questions are also welcome, as always, questions from people who are listening. The only thing we ask is that callers just try to be brief so that we can keep the program moving along and get in as many different people as possible, but anyone's welcome to call. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455 is the number to call. Toll free, and that means if you're listening in Chicago, for example, around Illinois, Indiana, in fact, anywhere in the United States, if you happen to be listening over the internet, you may use the toll free line. That's 800-222-9455. So again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll free, 800-222-9455. Ms. Tamayo, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us.
Oh, well, thank you for having us.
We certainly appreciate it. Maybe it would be good for folks to hear a little bit right here at the beginning about the Chicago Crime Commission and what it's all about. I know it is the bottom line that they should know is this is not a governmental organization. This is an organization of private citizens.
This is an organization of private citizens started in 1919. At that time, Chicago was experiencing a lot of unlawfulness, and a number of corporate and civic leaders from that time, 35 of them, got together and formed the Chicago Crime Commission to help law enforcement get the resources it needed to bring crime under control. Since then, it has remained very active, and it's the largest and the oldest of the citizens' crime commissions in the country. Mm. It works in mostly in areas involving social and community issues, but because it's not governmental, it's able to bridge the gap between law enforcement and citizens' action groups, and it's also able to bring the expertise of the corporate community to law enforcement or to help push for changes that they would not otherwise be in a position to push for.
Uh-huh. I mentioned at the beginning of the program, and there are some numbers in this book, and perhaps also you have to say that it's a difficult thing to do to come up with a number for the number of gangs or for particularly for gang membership. Different people have made different estimates. And in the book, there are some figures here, and that's where that between 75 and 100 gangs figure comes from. And the gang membership in metropolitan Chicago is estimated to be something like about 70,000, at least I think that's the figure here I noted down, and this comes from the U.S. Attorney's Office. Having said all that and acknowledged that perhaps no one really knows for sure, if you take a look at gang activity in the Chicago area and gang activity in other big cities, is that does Chicago compare? Is it similar to other cities?
It's hard to compare because of the way cities measure gang activity or gang membership. The information that's contained in the Chicago Crime Commission's gang book was derived from an inquiry in a two-year research project to law enforcement in the Chicago metropolitan area. And each of the suburban police departments, along with the city of Chicago, were asked to identify how many known gang members they had and how many they estimated in their community.
Mm-hmm.
So the information that's reported here, which identifies somewhere between 75,000 and 125,000 gang members, came directly from law enforcement. Our sources in law enforcement tell us that that's an extremely conservative number, that the number might actually be larger. But part of it is the difficulty in identifying who's a gang member. It used to be that they wore specific gang colors, and they were emblazoned in the jewelry, and there was sort of a physical persona of a gang member.
Mm-hmm.
As law enforcement has become more sophisticated in tracking down organized crime, and gangs are a form of organized crime, as they've tracked down organized crime, the organized crime, too, has become more sophisticated, and one of the offshoots of that sophistication is that they try to blend in so that they're not as easily identifiable. So they're still wearing the tattoos, but it's under their shirts, not in an area where everyone could see it. They may still have all of the gang signs and everything else, but they're far more discreet about when and how they use it. And so it's become increasingly difficult to identify the number of gang members, and they're also using a lot of younger kids. In the book, the information that we received identifies kids as young as 10, 11, and 12 who are being used by gang leaders and gang members to carry weapons. Part of that is because the gun laws have become so strict that if you're an adult and you're carrying a gun, the penalties are significantly more severe than if you're a juvenile. So they're putting the weapons on the juveniles. And it's hard to identify which of those juveniles are active gang members, are just gang member wannabes off of the gangster rap that you sort of hear, and you know which ones are, you really can't tell are gang members but might be very active in a gang.
I think it's interesting, these kind of changes that you talk about, if you think about the kind of research that scholars did on youth gangs going back now some decades. And they asked about what were the functions of the gang for the members, that you heard a lot of things about how gang members were there because it actually gave them something to belong to, gave them some sense of family. Perhaps it was a way of protecting themselves against predation by neighbors or neighboring gang members. And often the qualification social was attached to the gang. And that in what we're talking about here, as you say, is we're talking about organized crime, sophisticated criminal enterprises, and that perhaps what we're doing, we've moved more from the idea that gangs have this sort of social dimension to a more kind of corporate character. You can even see it in the structures and the sort of the command structures in the gang or the way that they're organized, and that their primary interest, whatever other interest they might have, their primary interest is in making money.
And that's exactly what has been the most significant change that gangs have involved. The information we received indicates that gangs are still joining that members are joining gangs for the traditional reasons, a sense of belonging, a sense of family, protection of self, protection of turf. For the girls involved in gangs, sometimes it's a way to engage in social activities and meet new people. But for the gang itself, they are now corporate enterprises, and they function like a corporation. They have a director of communications. They have somebody who's functioning as a treasurer. They have someone who's functioning as a corporate secretary, arranging and organizing the meetings and the communications. They'll have individuals at a street level serving as enforcers or collectors. And what motivates the gangs is the pursuit of money. They've stopped guarding their street corner and defining themselves jurisdictionally. They now follow where the money follows. And so one of the phenomena that police identify is that gangs use other gangs as subcontractors. They'll lease them territory to go sell their drugs. Or gangs that used to fight each other over turf wars have now become allies in the supply and distribution chain of whether it's drugs, which is predominantly the gang market staple, or it's guns, or some of these new areas, false identification, mortgage fraud, carjacking thefts, stolen goods. But it's principally drugs and money. Mm-hmm. And the lure for what appears to be the lure for young kids from the law enforcement perspective is the ability to make money.
I think that's a very interesting point that, again, if you think of the stereotype of gangs, you think of or these organizations that are very protective of territory and fight with each other over territory. And while that may indeed happen, you do see gangs increasingly cooperating, going into business together, and perhaps sitting down and saying, look, there's sort of no point in us fighting with each other. We can actually make money if we concentrate our efforts on doing whatever the criminal activity is and not with fighting with each other.
Well, and it's an interesting development that as they do that, law enforcement is still a jurisdictional capacity. Each community has its own law enforcement, and its jurisdiction ends at a street. The gang activity doesn't end at a street, and one of the phenomena of gang development is that in the Chicago area, we're seeing gangs come from the West Coast, principally. The Sereno 13s, which have been identified as one of the most violent gangs in the country, came out of the Southern California prison system. And they have branched out, and they're branching out into areas that the Chicago gangs don't have a stronghold. And rather than fight for the turf between the two, they're coming in, they're becoming visible. But the Chicago gangs are saying, we're not going to go fight them for the turf because maybe they bring something to the table that we don't have, and it'd be better for us to have an alliance with them. And I'm using them as an example, but there are many examples of actual gang members or gang groups using other gangs as an alliance towards their pursuit of profits. It's no different than corporate America.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Jeanette Tamayo. She's the general counsel for the Chicago Crime Commission. And if you're interested, again, in this subject, you might take a look at this book that they have put together. They titled The Gang Book, A Detailed Overview of Street Gangs in the Chicago Metropolitan Area, published by the Chicago Crime Commission. And if you're interested in that and finding out more about the commission and you have Internet access, the best thing to do is go to their website, which is www.chicagocrimecommission.org. That's all run together as one word, chicagocrimecommission.org. And questions welcome to 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You mentioned the fact that the gangs, while they may be somewhat territorial, their interests do cross the lines of jurisdiction of the various police departments and then the various administrative units within departments. So to collect this kind of information, what you have to do is go out there and solicit and talk with representatives of different, all sorts of different police departments, find out what they know just about their particular area, and then try to put that information together in a kind of a comprehensive way, comprehensive source. And that's what the intent of the book is. I was really surprised to learn that apparently on the state level, there is really nothing in the way of a central data bank clearinghouse. There isn't any state of Illinois effort to do what you have tried to do with this book.
Well, part of it is a priority. Because we're not involved in crisis intervention and a law enforcement response, we can step away from it and look at the problem more from a pattern perspective. And we don't have to put our officers, we don't have officers, we don't have to put them on the streets to fight the crime. And so it's hard for some of the law enforcement agencies who want to do this and who want to take this more global perspective to step back and be able to do it. And that's one of the reasons why they were so glad when we started doing this inquiry to give us information and to share and make available the information, because it was a way to accomplish something that they wanted to do. One of the offshoots of the increase in gangs, and part of it is an increase in visibility. There's some disagreement as to how much there's an increase in gang activity, but clearly there's an increase in visibility, and there's an increase in some communities where gangs previously weren't as active, is that the Illinois General Assembly convened a task force in the House to look at the issue of gangs and drugs, and it's chaired by Representative Linda Chapalavia, and they just held their first meeting a couple of weeks ago. At that first meeting, there was a gentleman who testified about the need to have a computerized database that tracks gang activity differently than exists right now. Because you can go into the database and find out who's a felon and who's involved in a known gang, but it doesn't track the associations. And that's what's key when you're dealing with organized crime. The who knows who and who works for who. And that's a piece that we're recommending and other law enforcement departments are recommending be developed and maintained so that police officers have real-time information on who's involved.
Mm-hmm. It seems that this book, the audience for this book would be fairly specialized in the sense that it would be people who were involved in law enforcement, people who were in government, perhaps people who did community organizing, people who were involved in education, because there are gangs that operate or at least gang members are maybe active in or just going to school. So you can imagine that there would be a number of people who have a special interest that would be interested in this. Is this something, do you think, that the average citizen is going to have any interest in or is going to get something out of?
Yes. And the groups that you've mentioned have an interesting perspective. This was written initially with law enforcement members in mind so that they would have a quick primer of what's going on in a reference book that they could carry with them. But it was also written for teachers and educators who are experiencing the gang problems in school and don't necessarily know what tattoos or what gang signs or colors they should be looking for. So again, it was a type of primer. An offshoot has been the tremendous interest that we've seen from just members of the public who want to look at the maps, because the book includes very detailed maps of the Chicago area and where the gangs are located, who want to see whether their house is somewhere in a gang territory. Community groups who have expressed that they feel empowered by this information, because now that there's a street corner identified to a gang, they can take real information to the local authorities and start talking about what to do about this gang problem. It's no longer an anecdotal, illusory problem that you can sweep away. And there has been interest from individuals involved with juvenile justice and juvenile reform, looking at what is it that draws kids into the gangs, what is it that they're doing in gangs, and maybe what do we do differently to help them.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you take a look at the maps that you have here, very detailed maps showing where particular gangs are active. And while you wouldn't say that that gangs are active everywhere, it does seem to be that there are some, and this is organized according to the various districts of the Chicago Police Department. There are certainly places where there's not gang activity, but if you page through here and you look at these maps, you would have to think that there are very large areas of the city where within a few blocks of where people live, there would be some area where there has been a report of of gang activity. And that's, as I say, it's not everywhere, but there are some areas that are very heavily populated with various kinds of gangs. And again, I would say that, certain sections where you wouldn't go more than a couple of blocks and you would run into one of these areas.
Well, one of the purposes of including the maps was, in essence, to out the gangs. You know, there's the common street lore of where the gangs are. Here is the data from the Chicago Police Department, from their gang intelligence unit, and it's not just from one unit, but they collect intelligence from lots of sources that tell you where the gangs are. And so while you might think that your street block is safe, if they're 2 to 3 blocks away, you might be a little more conscious about what's happening in your community and take more of an interest in helping make sure that the gangs are kept in check. Because ultimately, it comes down to the citizens. The police department can't enforce all of the laws on their own, and they can't keep the gangs in check on their own. They need the help of citizens, and giving this kind of information makes citizens more aware that they're everywhere. You know, it might not be in this particular little pocket, but it might be the pocket that you're walking through on your way to the grocery store, or it might be in the community next to yours, or it might be in your midst and you just never realized it before. And that's actually one point, if I can make, mm-hmm. about in a group that's interested in this, is a number of suburban parents who move out of the city of Chicago thinking that they're avoiding gangs and drugs, only to find that gangs and drugs are also in the suburban communities. And law enforcement has known that they've been there for the last 15 years or more, and they've been seeing the migration and the trend. So to them, it's not new information. It's certainly more quantifiable than they've had in the past. But to many residents, it puts a different perspective on what you're looking out for, and you might, as a parent, become more aware of things to look out and the risks that your children might be facing that you previously hadn't thought about.
I think there again, that's a significant point and something that in all of the stories that I read that came out at the time that the book came out, because it did get a goodly amount of attention in Chicago media, that was one of the things that really jumped out, the fact that gangs that have been previously active in the Chicago metropolitan area are indeed branching out. They're looking at other opportunities to move into areas where there's an opportunity for them to make money. There aren't other organized criminal activities going on. So, in fact, we have seen Chicago gangs moving their activities out into the suburbs and the county sort of around Chicago. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. And I guess I'm particularly interested in whether you can say anything about gang activity further downstate. Now, this may be a little bit outside of your area of interest since you are the Chicago Crime Commission. But I'm interested in anything that you might be able to say about that.
Okay. Well, while we are the Chicago Crime Commission, and that's how we started in 1919, our service area and our horizons have certainly expanded, and in many areas we perform much more of a statewide role. This was focused on the gangs in the metropolitan Chicago area because it was the first area that we were looking at. But many of the lures to the metropolitan suburban community is certainly something for non-suburban or more rural areas to look at. The traditional gangs are going to communities where they have a small law enforcement department, and maybe it's no officer that's assigned specifically to gang activity, or maybe it's one officer assigned to gang activity. So it's easier for them to operate in those communities where there are fewer law enforcement resources than it is to operate in the larger communities that might have teams of law enforcement dedicated to gang involvement and drug enforcement. The community members themselves might also be less focused on the amount of drugs that move through their community or might be sold in their communities. Whatever community you're in, if there's a drug sale, chances are that the drug did not originate there. It came from somewhere else. And so there are communities through which drugs are passing just on their way to being delivered, and there are communities in which the drug is being consumed, and they may have a gang problem, but not attribute it as a gang problem because they haven't looked at it from this global perspective. And the gangs see that as an opportunity to expand their operations. When you look at the maps of the city of Chicago, you see that a lot of the communities that have gangs that started in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and they've established their territory for a long time. The gangs that are coming in from the West Coast, there's no indication that they're in the city of Chicago. The indication is that they're starting to be found in communities outside of Chicago where there isn't an entrenched, established gang. So they're not having to fight for that territory. They're able to set up operations where a community or a law enforcement department may not see them as an immediate visible threat in the way that they might be seen in a larger department.
Something that, again, I think it's really interesting is that the phenomenon that, and it's almost, I don't even know what to attach to it, the idea that gang members would actually decide that they don't want to live in places where gangs are active, so that they will take then relocate their families to the suburbs because they don't want their kids growing up in places like that, and that there are gang members who will actually get up in the morning, get in their car, and commute to work, which might be in the Chicago metropolitan area, and then do their business and then go home at night, just like people who are in legitimate business do.
Well, one of the interesting responses that came from the survey is the reasons why asking law enforcement departments, what do you think are the reasons that motivate gangs to move out to the suburbs? And a common reason was that a gang member's family moved out, and they're moving out seeking the exact same type of communities that we're all seeking. Good schools, safe communities. But because they're seeking those things, they don't want to operate in those communities, so they continue their businesses elsewhere. Of course, as they move out and their friends move out and more move out, it changes the dynamic in that community. And no one quite anticipates that, but you do start seeing more gang members now living there, and so maybe there might be some more gang activity. And as they keep moving further out, and if you look at the phenomenon in Chicago, just your everyday citizen is moving further and further out, you can see where gangs at some point will be moving further and further out and become more visible in areas that today they may have no visibility whatsoever.
We are a little bit past our midpoint here, and again, I would just like to introduce our guest, Jeanette Tamayo. She's General Counsel for the Chicago Crime Commission. It is not a governmental organization. It's a citizens organization. It was founded in 1919. It is, in fact, the oldest of all of the citizens' crime commissions in the United States. It's a volunteer organization, and they are the people responsible for this book that we mentioned. And if you're interested in reading about this subject, and it is very, very interesting, about street gangs in the Chicago area and their activities, they've gathered together as much information as they could and put it into this book, which is called The Gang Book. And a detailed overview of street gangs in the Chicago metro area. If you're interested in finding out more about this or about the Chicago Crime Commission, the easiest thing to do is, provided you have the internet access, go to their website, which is www.chicagocrimecommission.org. And, of course, here on the program, if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And we do have somebody here who'd like to join in on the conversation, and we'll go there. The caller's in Indiana on our line number 4, the toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. Since basically what we're dealing with is illegitimate business, I was wondering if anyone in the group with you with, or perhaps the police or some academic, would have estimated the cost per unit, whatever in hell that unit might be, also versus legalizing some of this stuff. I don't think that changed the patterns of distribution or anything. It might make the cost go down, but I can't see these guys giving up their turf just because something was free, no longer, you know, carries time with it. So I wonder if you could speak in that. It's a fuzzy area, I know, and I sort of know about it firsthand. I'm interested in what the ideas are now, and when we get these guys are getting sophisticated, that they're paying attention to the news and working off of that. Something entirely different is going to have to be done to take care of this problem, it seems to me. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, you can answer that any way that you can.
Okay. First of all, there is an estimate of the cost of the business, especially in drugs involving gangs. And the estimate is that it's a $500 million a year is easily generated. It would put them in the top Fortune 500 companies if they were running a legitimate business. And that's a very, very conservative estimate given the volume. And we're talking about the Chicago area gangs. If you expand it nationally, you can only imagine the dollar value. There are costs to distribution, but the Chicago Crime Commission has not taken a position to support legalizing any of these activities. If anything, it's finding ways to restrict and to be tougher on these activities, but at the same time, recognizing that you have to have alternatives. And so when you're talking about youth, it's one thing to say law enforcement should be extremely tough on gun possession and the sale and distribution of drugs. And it's another thing to say, you know, just lock them up and throw away the key. We believe that you have to have intensive programs that help youth, that help guide them in the early stages. And even if they've entered this path, that gives them an opportunity to opt out. Given the socioeconomic situation that many of the youth face, the programs have to give them the type of support that many of our own children receive: strong family support, intervention, career opportunities, real life skills that give them choices. And so we would recommend, and do recommend in the book, tough penalties coupled with intensive rehabilitative and prevention programs.
Now, you talked earlier about the fact that often gangs use adolescents, maybe as young as 10, teenagers, in part. And one of the things they do is they have them hold the firearms because the penalties for them aren't as severe as it would be for the adults. But having said that, though, there are a lot of people, and particularly it's people in the leadership in these gangs, that aren't kids. They are adults. People in their 20s and 30s and perhaps even older. So here you're talking about a different kind of person, someone who maybe is a long way past diversion.
And you're going to have some of those. And so for those individuals, for example, we recommend making the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon a Class 2 felony. And then if they actually use the weapon, a felon uses it, then making it a Class 1 felony. So that, and we recommend using the federal sentencing guidelines and, whenever possible, charging the individuals with the federal crime so that they're doing the longer time in a federal penitentiary. We recommend that there have to be controls on adults. And one of those is maybe prohibiting the purchase of more than one handgun per month, extending the assault weapon ban, requiring gun dealers who are involved in licensing go through a strict licensing process, ban the 50-caliber sniper rifles, which, as I understand it, are powerful enough to shoot down a commercial airplane. You can hardly make an argument that this is something, you know, that you would use for hunting game. So there are things that are directed specifically at adults in terms of what opportunities are available for them. You know, again, it's trying to find a way to make a difference so that they have an option when they leave prison, an option to make a different choice in their life than they made it earlier, and that they have some gainful, some skills that will allow them to be gainfully employed. If they're pursuing money and you're looking at what a gang offers and what a job at a fast food restaurant offers, that the money from drug sales might be too tempting to pass up. Mm-hmm. And so you have to give them an alternative.
Well, let's talk with another listener and hear where we are in Champaign County, line one. Hello.
Hi there. This is perhaps a bit of a digression, but it reflects the whole climate of law and jurisprudence in Chicago, and I'm wondering whether the Crime Commission kind of just watched on when the Verge revelations came out. I understand it's people at Northwestern Law School and the Midwest Human Rights Commission out of Minneapolis that actually got to the bottom of this, and if the people in the, you know, the ghetto think that the police are just another gang that has the power to put people up against the wall and make them confess, it's obviously very bad for the climate, and one can say it's not happening anymore, but I think it led to a whole attitude towards the police in Chicago, and I don't know how you'll handle that, but on a parochial note, the Urbana City Council is taking more comments on the police Citizen Review Commission tonight, so people in the near area could know that that's another way that citizens can get involved in justice in our county and our city.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. Well, I don't know, Ms. Tamayo, can you comment on that?
Because I'm not familiar with the Northwestern Law School findings and where they're at, I'd like to comment on a global basis. That one of the functions of the Chicago Crime Commission is that we have an anonymous crime reporting hotline, and it's specifically out there for those individuals who don't trust the police. We recommend that everyone report crime to their local police departments and just dial 911. But there are individuals who, for whatever reason, don't. And so we provide a mechanism that they can reach out, report the information, and then we take the responsibility for getting it to the right law enforcement opportunity. So when there's a distrust of police, and in some communities there's an indication that there is a distrust of police, we're trying to provide another avenue for citizens to report the crime and be able to get law enforcement to respond to it. And one of our functions and many of the task forces that we work on is to help bridge that communication between law enforcement and citizens to create a relationship of trust. And if they're working together on projects, hopefully that will permeate down to the communities and there will be a sense of working together. But law enforcement alone can't eradicate the gangs. The communities on their own can't eradicate the gangs. Schools can't do it on their own, and no community can on its own. And so what we're hoping will come out of is an offshoot of this gang book is a type of open dialogue that we're having right now and saying maybe we all need to figure out a way to work together and collectively and come out with a more comprehensive, concerted strategy that benefits us all.
Our guest in this hour of the show is Jeanette Tamayo. She's general counsel for the Chicago Crime Commission. If you'd like to find out more about the commission, and if you would like to get a copy of this report that we've talked about, the gang book, you can do all of that by going to their website, which is www.chicagocrimecommission.org. You can also call in here, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the other things that the book tries to do is to talk about or catalog to some extent the kinds of criminal activities that gangs are involved in. And they do the kinds of things that you would expect. They're involved in dealing with drugs and with guns, and they're involved in robberies and burglaries and other kinds of property crime. But the thing, again, one of the things that I found interesting was this tendency apparently of gangs to move into other kinds of criminal activities that are perhaps a bit more white collar and high tech, things like, for example, mortgage fraud. I was really surprised to see that. Also, apparently, gangs are being involved in identity theft. They're things that I wouldn't have really before thought of as particularly being the kinds of things that street gangs would be involved in.
Well, what happens with the gangs is that you know, they are also like anyone else, expanding their market, and they're looking for opportunities. And as a criminal enterprise, money laundering is a huge function of the gangs. Mm-hmm. They're receiving their profits illegally, and they need to find a way to wash that money and launder it so they have a, to show some legal funds. And oftentimes they do it by acquiring legitimate businesses. Unfortunately, the mortgage industry has lent itself to being bought, and you have gangs that own mortgage companies and operate mortgage companies. And the way that they do it is by getting a straw purchaser to buy a property, in the same way that they've been using a straw purchaser to buy weapons. And they know that their background is being checked for a gun purchase, so they themselves don't buy. They have someone who has a very clean background buy the gun and then give it to them, and they pay that individual something. They're now using that type of a straw purchaser to buy properties. And so the property in the community shows up as being owned by a very legitimate individual. In fact, it may have been used as a way to launder a lot of the money, and it may get resold very quickly as another way to launder the money. And there are individuals who are willing to do this. On the identity theft issue, that is a huge, huge concern. We know that there are Chicago area gangs that are selling false identification to individuals outside of the United States. Right now, when our borders, when we're having a discussion about how we control better our borders and how we know who's in our country, that is of significant concern to law enforcement. It should be a significant concern to everyone, because there is a possibility that they could be selling it to individuals, some who might want that identification to come into the U.S. To gain employment, but there are others who might want that identification to come into the U.S. to do other things. And the gangs are helping facilitate that. In some communities in the Chicago area, the immigration-type paperwork or documentation that's needed for employment, it's being sold by the gangs. And so now they're selling the individual false identification. Maybe they'll push the individual to do something else that the individual might not be interested in doing, but may have no choice because of who they're dealing with. Hmm.
Well, let's talk with another caller here in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, I have two questions, then I'll hang up. One, I was wondering, is it still true that to break up gangs, you really have to somehow infiltrate them, and that it's still extremely difficult to do that? And then two is, in the suburbs, I'm wondering if how do they outline the borders of their territory? Do they still use graffiti, or is there some other way? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. With regard to your first question, my understanding from the information we received from law enforcement is that sometimes they use the infiltration of gangs to try to break them up. But that what has been very effective for the city of Chicago has been an intensive, concerted effort where they break up the street market. So if they have a lock on a street corner and they have an open drug market, they clamp down and shut down the business, so it's hitting them at the profit base. That forces the gang to retreat, and in some cases, if they're able to make a sufficient number of arrests and then get the convictions, takes the leadership out of it for a while, because we do know that gangs continue to operate even though they're in prison, and sometimes will continue to manage the gangs from prison. But they're trying to go after the profits, because if the gangs are following the money, then law enforcement wants to be following the money and target them where it hits them. They're also trying to target where it hits them in terms of membership, making kids aware of what's really involved in gang life, how dangerous it is, and how much it is that they're risking by going there, so that they can't reach as many new members as they might have thought possible. In terms of the suburbs, how are they outlining their borders? It's an interesting question because gang graffiti used to be very prominent at different points in time, but the information that the law enforcement responders gave to us is that gang graffiti is being used less and less, and part of it is because they don't want to be as readily identified, and they now operate using modern communications, cell phones, internet sites. There have been indications of chat rooms where they now communicate, and so they no longer need to be as physically visible as they were in the past. There's a whole other avenue for them to identify themselves to each other and to whomever they want to be known that they exist.
Well, and that would go back to some of the earlier comments you made about the fact that a lot of gangs, they're not displaying colors as much as they did, visible tattoos, anything that would mark them. They've realized that it actually would make more sense for them just to blend in, not for them to be advertising that they're gang members, because that's only going to call them to the attention of the police. So it would actually be pretty smart to do whatever you could to just be more quiet about what you were doing, not advertise your presence, not advertise your gang membership.
Right. There's only the Hispanic gangs are the only ones in the suburbs who seem to still use graffiti as a way, as a gang activity. But most of the others are trying to blend in as much as possible.
We're getting really short on time. Maybe we'll try and see if we get one more caller in here from Crystal Lake on our line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I think as a result of the poor economy, it forces many people into gangs to make money however they can. But beyond that, I think it's a national problem. The national government is responsible for the transport and sale of drugs, because during the Iran Gate and Contra Gate era, you could see planes unloading drugs, cocaine, at the Homestead, Florida military air base. And that was on TV. And also Gary Webb wrote that the CIA sold cocaine from Latin America to gang members, and they got guns in exchange. And so that's part of the picture, that you're fighting the national government, because the national government can then use that money from sale of drugs to finance at one time wars like Contra Gate, which was a secret war, and if they got any now, I don't know. But anyhow, they seem to use that for financing their things that they don't want public.
Well, let me get the chance for the guest to comment. And I don't know if you can comment, because obviously the events the caller is talking about took place some time ago, and I know at least some people would argue that there's some question about whether they took place at all. Can you comment on that at all, and that angle at all?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to pick up on a point that the caller made, and it's a great focus on the problem, and that's that gangs are increasingly becoming a national problem. They're no longer vocalized to urban areas or to large cities. The fact that we have gangs coming in from the West Coast, and the gangs in the Chicago area have been identified in all of the surrounding states as far away as New York and in California. Gangs are going to federal prison, where they're meeting individuals, oftentimes white-collar criminals, with expertise in financing and technology and in other areas. And they're broadening their horizons. As they do that, we need to develop a national response to the gang problem and recognize that they're moving tremendous amounts of money and goods between our borders and in and out of our borders. And one of our hopes in making all of the recommendations there is some dialogue about how the national government, and it might be the Department of Homeland Security or some other agency, but how they can help bring funds to Illinois so that your localized small police departments can use the resources of larger cities, but also tap into the national intelligence centers and national resources to help fight the problems before they become entrenched problems in their communities.
Well, we're just about at the point where we have to finish up here. Anything, last little bit that you might like to talk about, particularly whether if there was something in this that as a result of putting this information together you found surprising or particularly noteworthy? Is there anything that we haven't touched on?
Surprising trends is that the number of Hispanic gangs, the rise in the number of Hispanic gangs and the rise in the power structure within those gangs and their affiliations to other groups. The Sereno 13 have an affiliation with the Mexican Mafia. Mara Salvatrucha, MS-13, have an affiliation with the Mexican Mafia. And so you're starting to see a different type of organized crime than you may have thought about when you hear the words of organized crime. And that was a revelation. The other revelation is how effective the City of Chicago Police Department has in dealing with it by creating specialized task forces and really going after the profit centers. They've been able to make a dent. And that's making a difference in the City of Chicago. And maybe there are things from their experiences that the suburban communities and downstate communities could learn and adapt, both as a prevention and as a response.
Well, again, if people are interested in looking at this collection of information about street gangs in the Chicago area, the Gang Book, it has been put together by the Chicago Crime Commission. And if you're interested in finding out more about the commission or looking at the book or getting a copy, you can go to their website. It's www.chicagocrimecommission.org. And our guest here, Jeanette Tamayo, is general counsel for the Chicago Crime Commission. Ms. Tamayo, thank you very much.
Welcome, and thank you. We appreciate the opportunity.